My name is Leah Carter. I am a fourth-year medical student, an abortion and loss doula, and a health policy advocate working towards health equity and access to underserved communities.
And I'm Brianna Lopez. I'm a winemaker, current master's student, and advocate for raising awareness about exploited women, specifically human trafficking.
You're listening to ACT UP, a podcast that addresses important issues in our world today. Join us weekly as we discuss hot topics, influential women, and grassroots movements across the country. We raise our voices to not only boost awareness, but to spark our listeners to take action within their communities.
The time of this recording is September 6, 2020 at 4:56 p.m. Things may have changed by the time that you hear this. Before we dive into hot topics, we would like to put a trigger warning on this episode due to talks of rape and sex trafficking.
All right, our first hot topic is going to be about Operation Not Forgotten. This operation deals with the U.S. Marshal Service Missing Child Unit in conjunction with the agency's Southeast Regional Fugitive Task Force, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and Georgia state and local agencies. They led an operation in Atlanta and Macon, Georgia to rescue endangered missing children. This is just so crazy to me because, one, I currently have a house in Macon, Georgia, so it definitely hits home, but also it definitely shows that sex trafficking, human trafficking in any form is around the corner, it's in your backyard, it's under your nose. This two-week mission called Operation Not Forgotten resulted in the rescuing of 26 children. That's 26 children, and they arrested 9 criminal associates. But again, that was the rescuing of 26 children and the safe location of 13 children and the arrest of 9 criminal associates. Additionally, investigators cleared 26 arrest warrants and filed additional charges for alleged crimes related to sex trafficking, parental kidnapping, registered sex offender violations, drug and weapon possessions, and custodial interference. The 26 warrants cleared included 19 arrest warrants for a total of 9 individuals arrested. That's 9 individuals who had multiple warrants out.
To me, it's always good news when children are located. I hope they suffer all of the consequences. I don't know what those consequences are, but they need to suffer all of them.
The sad thing is that these missing children were considered to be some of the most at-risk and challenging recovery cases in the area, based on indications of high risk factors such as victimization of child sex trafficking, child exploitation, sexual abuse, physical abuse, medical or mental health conditions. You may be thinking or wondering, what does it mean to be considered the most at risk? I have volunteered for various organizations and I work and fight for victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, and human trafficking. While human trafficking spans all demographics, there are some circumstances or vulnerabilities that leads to a higher susceptibility to victimization and human trafficking. Some of these vulnerabilities are runaway and homeless youth, foreign nationals, and individuals who have experienced violence and trauma.
And especially seeing that these children were, as you said, some of the most vulnerable. I really hope that all of these children that were found are able to find peace and get all of the therapy and support that they need to move forward from this. And I hope this also sparks more attempts and more successful rescues of trafficked women and children.
Yeah. It is heartbreaking that these children will experience devastating psychological effects. These traffickers don't care about the children or the impacts of being sexually exploited, but rather are only in it for the money. Many survivors will end up experiencing post-traumatic stress, difficulty in relationships, depression, memory loss, anxiety, fear, guilt, and the list just continues on. These traffickers have forever change these children's futures. And that to me is just devastating. Nonetheless, the Justice for Victims of Trafficking Act of 2015 enhanced the U.S. Marshals' authority to assist federal, state, and local law enforcement with the recovery of missing, endangered, or abducted children. Regardless of whether a fugitive or sex offender was involved, the Marshals establishing a missing child unit to oversee and manage the implementation of this enhanced authority under the Act. And I bet you were wondering, what the heck is the Justice for Victims of Trafficking Act of 2015? Well, this is a bill that establishes the Domestic Trafficking Victims Fund, into which revenues from such penalty shall be deposited and used to award grants or enhance victims' programming. Specified funding is allowed to provide services for victims of child pornography. This bill also expands the definition of child abuse to include human trafficking and the production of child pornography, and expands criminal sanctions to include persons who patronize or solicit children for commercial acts. Under this act, DOJ is required to ensure that each DOJ anti-human trafficking program includes technical training on investigating and prosecuting persons who obtain, patronize, or solicit commercial sex acts involving a person subject to severe forms of trafficking in person.
In other news, the California State Senate just passed a Senate Bill 145 that now removes mandated reporting and registration as a sex offender for certain offenses. So this was also something that I saw on social media, but the way that I saw it was very interesting. There were a few people posted or reposted a particular individual who is at the forefront of the recall petition for Governor Gavin Newsom, and also wants to run if that recall election does go into voting. But the post that I saw was saying, this is why you can't vote for Democrats, because they're making pedophilia legal, and I'm going to run on the Republican ticket and make sure to save the children. That is not what this bill is saying. First of all, it is a bill. It is not yet law. And if people would, you know, use the same internet access that they have in order to see these posts and look into what things are saying, as opposed to just taking posts and shares at face value, you will see that this bill does not attempt to change any criminalization of sex with minors. The only change is to standardize the reporting for convicted criminals. So sex with a minor, if convicted, will remain a felony in California. The difference that this bill is aiming to impose is that it is up to the judge's discretion. As California law currently states, if a person is convicted of sex with a minor and that involves vaginal intercourse, it's up to the judge's discretion. It up to the discretion of judges of all criminal convictions for sex offenders. So I do appreciate that they're standardizing the law. I kind of wish it was standardized in the different direction where there was no discretion, but I also know that there is a lot of nuance in law that I do not understand, because I am not a lawyer. I am not a defense attorney. But I think that this is a very interesting bill to have passed at the time. So it has passed the Senate in California. And in order to become a law, it has to first be signed by the current governor, Gavin Newsom. I don't know what his stance is on this. And he is not up for re-election this year, and the two past petitions to recall him this year have flopped. So I really don't know if he's really paying too much attention to the current social media drama that's going on surrounding this particular bill.
I think it's crazy that topics like this are always so controversial when it comes to social media. Mm-hmm. And I really wish that people, instead of diving into all of the drama that's surrounding these social media posts, that they would just go seek the true information out on the internet. Like, the mm-hmm. internet does have a lot of false things, but it also has a lot of accurate things mm-hmm. and information. My hope would be in these circumstances that instead of diving in and getting all caught up with all this drama, that you'd actually seek out and read the bill, because it's not a law. It is a bill, like you stated, and it really isn't changing too much. It's a very minute amount that's actually changing, but it's not in place yet. It's still got a long way to go. And even in terms of like the re-elections, I feel like that could be a whole nother topic, just because almost every state has a governor where people have been protesting or doing petitions to get them out of office for mistakes or mishandlings of protests. And I think one thing that people need to do is also take a step back and realize that not everyone's perfect. Not everyone's going to have the exact answer on how to fix or how to go forward with a lot of these issues that are going on today, because they are new issues that have not ever been dealt with.
Yeah, it's also in addition to recognizing the humanity of these politicians, no matter how many things do agree on, like just because you disagree on one particular thing doesn't mean that you write off someone completely. There are certain instances where there is room to agree to disagree. I don't
I just
know
think it
what
will
I'm
be
gonna say.
interesting to see when all of these governors come up for re-election, if they are actually re-elected, or if they decide to step down and not be re-elected because of just all these problems that they are encountering, and if this kind of squashes their political career, or if they're even able to move up in their political career potentially to the White House. In terms of this bill and leaving it up to the discretion of the judges, I think this has like good and kind of bad note to it. Good maybe for the instance of if you were pretty get drunk and maybe you're trying to pee and you pee in a public area, that, playground or something. I don't think you should be penalized and put on a sex registry for being drunk and intoxicated and going to the bathroom and not realizing where you are. Of course, if children are around, that's probably not the best.
But I
And
don't
if,
think most
but
children, if you're, well, I don't know.
hopefully it's
They're,
not in the day that they're getting drunk and intoxicated.
yeah. If it's, a 2 p 2 a.m. drunken night, and you stumble onto a playground and you pee on the slide, like, you shouldn't have to register as a sex offender. You shouldn't.
Yeah,
This is.
I definitely agree with you. I don't think that is. So there, I think the discretionary would be good. So then we can kind of wean out those cases where you're just like, oh, this is just like a drunken encounter.
Agree.
That is like a mistake. They're not a sex offender. They weren't offending any children, on that playground. So in that instance, I definitely think it's good. But discretionary, some judges, especially depending on the state you're in, if it's a super conservative state, can still be biased. And even if you make a mistake, some judges could still penalize you for making that mistake and put you on the registry list. So I think that there's obviously good and bad, but if there was a little bit more regulation for them, then maybe we can wean out not sex offenders to the true sex offenders, and maybe
I
this is
also
the first step in that direction.
Think the law currently as it stands, because the discretion is only reserved for criminals convicted of vaginal intercourse, it's one, discriminatory against homosexual predators, and also leaves female victims more vulnerable. If there's a particular person who is convicted of vaginal sex with a minor and then is not mandated to report for whatever reason a judge comes up with, and then they're living in an area that then predisposes any other person with a vagina in that area where the sex offender now lives to possibly being victimized by them because they're unaware.
Yes, yeah, I agree. I've actually looked up some app on sex offenders, and I used to have an app that was free, and I feel like all apps nowadays are going to, you can download it for free, but then now you have to pay.
To
And I feel
pay.
like there should definitely be an app, or there's possibly a website. I just have not looked at any websites, but apps that are free where you can look at sex offenders just to be knowledgeable. If you're a new family and you're very unsure of where to live or the schools, and I would myself want to know if there's a sex offender down the street. And not necessarily would that prevent me from buying a home, but it'd make me more aware where my surroundings and, just to be more cautious, of course.
Yeah, that's also
So
something. Now that I'm like looking at residencies, there's only a few cities that I've lived in that I'm kind of familiar with, but to be able to have that knowledge, I think would just further empower me. Having that awareness would make me feel a little more safe But I don't think that Governor Newsom has to respond anytime soon. And I also do not think that this particular bill is on the top of his priority list with the current pandemic. But we will see how he responds.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see how he responds. All right. On a different note, which can kind of be, you can think of it as exciting, there's a movement led by Exodus Cry. And Exodus Cry is an organization that is committed to abolishing sex trafficking and really just breaking the cycle of commercial sexual exploitation while assisting and empowering its victims. So this is like, this is close to home for me. This is what I'm passionate about. This is what I advocate for. And when I came upon this on social media, I was just like, this is amazing. I'm so surprised I've not heard about this. So their movement is to bring down Pornhub. And they actually hit a milestone of 2 million signatures. And I am someone who participated in this 2 million signatures. Pornhub, as of currently now, has been enabling and profiting off of videos of rape, trafficking, and other abuse. And it's honestly a bad business model. I don't know why you would even have a site where you have victims on there like this. So Pornhub actually partnered with a sex trafficking ring, selling crime scenes of Pornhub for 9 years. 9 years with almost 1 billion views. Pornhub notably profited from this mass exploitation. It even enabled Pornhub to create an exclusive kind of secretive channel. It mirrors like the dark web, and it's supposed to help make these pedophiles more anonymous by going onto their sites, which you're just creating a pedophile's paradise in the sense. But Pornhub, as of right now, their most researched topic, when if you go onto the site and you type in, I guess, whatever video you want to see, is teen. And the laws about the criminality of underage pornography are not ambiguous. A
That's
person
pretty
under
clear.
the age of 18, even if they gave initial consent to perform a sexual act or be in a video, the presumption is that a child cannot legally consent to sex. And it makes it clear under the federal law. I deal with this law and with victims all the time who are underage because they're like, well, I said yes to it. It doesn't matter if you're under the age of 18 and you're involved in a commercial sex act and it's under the age, it is by definition you are a victim. And so if people are actively seeking out this category of teen, so it's super frustrating. But I also had read a victim statement stating her experience that she realized a video of her being sexually exploited was on Pornhub. And she reached out to Pornhub and told them what had happened and that she did not give consent. And what she stated was that someone in an office in front of a computer screen got to choose whether my pain and suffering was valid enough for them. And that stung like absolute hell because she was did not give consent and was underage, and Pornhub refused to take the video of her rape down.
I
That's
don't
crazy to me.
understand how they're still legally allowed to operate. Like you said, teen is one of the most searched categories. Some other terms that are frequently used searching are words like force or surprise or exploited. And I don't understand the pleasure that anyone could get from seeing those types of videos. I personally just don't understand it. And the fact that Pornhub recognizes that there's a market for it and then further exploits these victims in order to profit off of it is really absurd.
It's honestly, it makes my skin crawl just talking about it right now and gives me goosebumps because I cannot imagine one being sexually assaulted, but then two having it be on the internet where thousands and thousands, if not millions of people are downloading your video of your rape. And even if the video is taken down, it's been downloaded and shared and it's out there. It will never be able to be permanently deleted. And she's going to be continually for the rest of her life reliving this rape, and it's heart-wrenching.
And even after all of that, for this company that allowed that exploitation to happen, for them to still profit, even if it's not no longer off of the video of her abuse, but knowing that, or just even imagining that this could be the story of so many other people, and having that knowledge and continuing to live with that, and Pornhub's just still out here like it's nothing.
Like it's no big deal. And I think any company, if someone's coming out to you and saying, like, this video of me is of my rape, I didn't give consent and I'm underage, she says that she was bound, she was gagged, and crying no. So what more evidence would Pornhub need in order to realize that that's a rape
I don't
and
know.
to not want to take it down? It just baffles me
But even if it
that.
was staged, because a lot of porn is, even if it was staged, the fact that this is being so readily consumed by so many people.
Well, I think that this is the porn industry is just another industry that just needs to be held accountable for the content that they put up. And especially if they have victims coming to them directly saying that this is rape, I did not consent and I'm underage, there should be no question on taking it down. Whether they think it's staged or not, it shouldn't matter. It should be taken down. They should not have videos of people who are bound, gagged, and crying saying no. Whether it's staged or not, you're creating a niche industry of men and or women who like this. Rather, if you didn't have the content at all, maybe they wouldn't even seek it out.
I see what you're saying. I feel like not having it accessible wouldn't really change somebody's fetishes, and I don't want to kink shame. But at the same time, like, wrong is wrong. Like, this is wrong. This is someone who is obviously victimized, and the very least that they could do is immediately remove that video. Immediately.
Yeah.
That's the least.
So recently, Pornhub has been scrambling to, of course, hide this evidence of their crimes and move their assets because they know they're going to be sued, and they know that this is going to become a public matter all over social media. And even some celebrities have been trying to bring it to the attention of their followers. And I think that's why, this movement has reached 2 million plus signatures because people are tired of this. So I think Ixodes Cries is an organization that is doing great work. So I really hope that they make a difference in that they can get Pornhub to be shut down or get more regulations on the industry.
Yeah, especially with a free site like Pornhub, a lot of the even people who do consent and are paid for their work are still not paid a good wage. So if you need porn, support your local OnlyFans sex worker and do that, because they're consenting to have their content released. And I really am loving this movement of sex workers taking ownership of an industry that previously exploited a lot of women and profiting off of it. I think that it's their time. Yeah, I'm all about agency and autonomy and allowing people to live their best lives as they see fit, as long as they're not harming others. So, moving on, a 16-year-old Latina named Zephaniah Zephy Trevino was sex trafficked and now faces life in prison for the murder of her abuser. She was forced into sex work with drugs and threats against her family, and the person who trafficked her killed her buyer, and she is being held as an accessory to murder. Her parents are really desperate and stated that their daughter met an adult in May of 2019 who began grooming her for sex trafficking through coercion, by using physical threats, threats of death against her family, and also by drugging her. She was forced numerous times to participate in sexual acts with various adults by her trafficker. And ultimately, this cycle of abuse ended when the person who was trafficking her killed a man that Zephy was being forced to perform sexual acts with. She has been in the Henry Wade Juvenile Justice Facility since last fall, awaiting trial, even though the DA's office has been made aware that Zephy was being forced to perform sexual acts on adults. They are still pushing her to take a plea deal with a long sentence rather than defending her at trial. She maintains her innocence, as she should, and her parents are having to gather funds to pay for her legal defense to fight on their daughter's behalf. Unfortunately, this story is pretty common in America.
It is.
Zephy is just one person. Syntonia Brown was recently released from prison after serving years after murdering her abuser. There's also a story of a young black girl named Crystal Kaiser in Kenosha, Wisconsin. In 2018, she was sentenced to prison, and she has been since been awaiting trial and was put on $1 million bond, a
Oh
million
my
dollar bail.
God.
Nobody can
A
pay that.
million dollars? A
$1 million
million
because
dollars.
she's killed the man who solicited her online. Her story is she put up an ad to make money so she could buy school supplies. And a person who had been not convicted, but there had been several complaints by other black girls in Kenosha, Wisconsin, that he had raped and abused them. And the police did nothing about it. And they also, because he was not investigated or convicted, he did not have to register as a sex offender and then made contact with Crystal Kaiser. And she ended up killing him and was placed on $1 million bail. It was June of this year that the Milwaukee Freedom Fund was able to, with all of the money that they received after donations following George Floyd's death, they were able to bail her out, but she's still awaiting trial. So if her case is dismissed, she is going to donate all of her money to other freedom funds. There's also a freedom fund called Survived and Punished, which specifically aims to help people who are convicted or awaiting trial after murdering their abusers throughout the United States. So there's Zephy, there's Syntonia, there's Crystal, there's all of these people whose names we don't know who are
Yeah.
being held awaiting a trial for fighting in self-defense.
Going back to like the Pornhub thing and even relating this, I don't see how Pornhub thinks it's okay to have rape videos up. And I don't understand how our judicial system thinks that it is okay to prosecute to the fullest these individuals who were defending themselves. They were being forced to perform sexual acts by their trafficker. And like I stated previously, human trafficking knows no boundaries. Age, race, gender, all of that. And pertaining to this example of Zeffie, she more likely met this guy through social media or at the mall or at school or another public place or even like online from an ad. And these men, most of the time it is a man, sometimes it can be a woman, but most of the time it is a man. They pretend to be these young girls' boyfriends and they'll buy them gifts and they'll treat them really nice and they'll take them out to dinner. And eventually, that is the phase that we call grooming phase. And after they're groomed with all that, then it's kind of like, okay, now you got to pay me back. Now I've gained your confidence. I've like kind of wooed you over. Now I need you either for me or for someone else to perform a sexual act. And then it just builds from there. A lot of the times, like in Zeffie's case, they threaten the person, the victim. They threaten their families. They take away their passports if they're foreign nationals. It happens everywhere. And it's not just in certain states, it's literally everywhere. It's in your backyard. And this is just something that our world really needs to wake up to because just like Zeffie and all those girls you stated, Leah, there are more girls out there dealing with this, being prosecuted to the fullest for defending themselves, to not have to perform sexual acts against their will, that
No,
this
it's
happens.
really ridiculous. There's so many people that are being affected by this. And their the only way that they saw out was, the route that they took in terms of murdering their abuser. And all of these girls that we have mentioned were underage. So they were specifically chosen and groomed by these traffickers and by these abusers because of their age, a lot of them also because of their race, because they know that, as you mentioned, foreign nationals, because of their status of being undocumented, are fearful of going to authorities and reporting these crimes. And also, a lot of black girls that are exploited in this way are also not forthcoming with authorities because of the history of police agencies and black people and the abuse that they experience at the hands of the authorities.
It is very terrible. I think, into from the side of being an advocate and working with various organizations, we also lack racial diversity in the organizations and having the right people on board that know various different languages. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if in the past was only a certain ethnic group, like only whites who started this off, because there's only been one organization that I worked with that mm-hmm. were all African American. I was the only white woman, mm-hmm. and they were the only ones to train me on how to interact with someone who is not of my same race and or appearance, mm-hmm. because they were saying that some of the organizations they have dealt with, that a lot of white women run these organizations and they can be very judgmental of these women, mm-hmm. and which makes them not want to seek out help, which is the whole purpose of being an organization. Yes. And so I think just across the board too, also if you're an African American or Hispanic, any other race that isn't white and you're being trafficked but you want help, I think there is a racial aspect to it of where they don't want to necessarily seek out help because there's a potential of being judged. Mm-hmm. Even though it's not their fault, I think that is a big factor in it that we need to address as an industry and do better on.
Yeah, I think advocacy, no matter what you advocate for, like you in terms of advocating for victims of trafficking and me advocating for people who are seeking abortions, cultural competence is huge. Like, I will never understand what it means to be a Latina woman, an Asian woman, a white woman. All I know is my experience as a Black woman, which also still a unique experience. And having mm-hmm. that diversity within an organization is very helpful. But also, I think a lot of times organizations overlook the value that diversity brings in terms of implementing plan and really just seek to diversify for pictures. So they look for people who may appear different so they can put it on a website and say, oh, we're so diverse. But in terms of enacting policies, those people who are there or have been hired for diversity, their voices aren't always heard. So I think that cultural competence is really vital, especially, like you said, in working and advocating for victims of sex trafficking. I'm not going to come forward if I'm a victim and I know that this white lady is going to judge me and assume certain things because of my race or because of what language I speak. So that is a very important point.
Yeah. All right. The next topic that we're going to be talking about is Dictionary.com's largest update. So they have recently updated thousands of entries and added hundreds of new words in its largest release to date. Mm-hmm. It has updated more than 15,000 entries and added 650 brand new terms, which to me, I'm like, I got to go get a new dictionary now. Because obviously, the one I have is probably not going to be accurate.
Out of date.
But many of these revisions deal with language related to identity and topics like race and ethnicity, gender and sexuality, and health and wellness. So although I think that this is long overdue, it is, I think, worth the wait now, I guess, because it's out. Because these updated entries and words are going to be a great reflection of our society and the language and how it has evolved mm-hmm. throughout all these movements, the Me Too and the Black Lives Matter and COVID-19. And this year, I think, has just really, I think, accelerated it, which pushed them to update it. But it's definitely been long overdue.
I agree. I think that language is so important in terms of how people express themselves and the fact that it's being reflected kind of in a more official way, even though a lot of the terms that they've added have been used for years by other people. I respect this. I appreciate this update.
Yeah, I think it's a step in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And what is really cool is that some of the major site-wide changes to these existing entries mm-hmm. have to do with race and ethnicity. And what I really like is, for example, they're capitalizing the B in black in reference to people, which the company is even saying it's they're doing it as a mark of respect and recognition. And they're going to not just do it with that word, but they're going to do it with a lot of other entries, such as Afro-Latino, brown face, and white splain. They're going to be doing it with a lot of words and also changing up different references to words. So they're going to replace references to homosexual with gay, gay men, or gay women, and reference to homosexuality with gay sexual orientations. So it's cool to be living through the changes, but I'm also just super excited because this is the start, but of course, this isn't the ending of it. We're going to continually have new words added.
A lot of these changes in this update, I think, also reflect a mindset of decolonizing, like, what it means to be proper. Like, I know growing up for me, my mom would say, ain't a word in the dictionary. So it was, I was kind of brought up with the mindset that, like, if it's not in the dictionary, it's not a word I should be using. And so I think that sometimes that still kind of seeps into my mind when I'm having conversations. I'm like, oh, I don't think that's really a word. I can use it. But that is really reflective on, like, who I'm having a conversation with. But I think that this update for anybody else that struggles like that with me, but also for people who don't necessarily have that struggle, but who are unfamiliar with the term, like, having a place that they recognize as a legitimate and trusted source have a definition for them might be very helpful. I also, maybe people will stop using Urban Dictionary. Urban Dictionary serves its purpose.
If I was using it all the time when I was younger.
If people use a word and I'm like, I am unsure what that means, Urban Dictionary is great for that. And, you know, just to get a basic meaning of it. But dictionary.com is something that, especially in college or in high school when you're writing a paper, it's a source that you can use and even cite that professors have a lot harder time going against as opposed to using urbandictionary.com. In that sense.
Yeah. I think even like, so when I was in undergrad, I had an addictions class and we had to write a lot of papers on addictions in terms of drugs and also suicide. And in terms of just writing papers, I do remember going online and, you know, finding reputable sources, looking at dictionary.com. I am a student. I'm not a mental health professional. And so I think with dictionary.com, even adding and changing the language that describes suicide and addiction, it's a great way to not only help students, people in general who don't have that mental health background, but they're taking into consideration the language that mental health professionals and suicide prevention specialists prefer.
One of the additions is all instances of the phrase commit suicide have been replaced on dictionary.com with die by suicide. So as you were saying, this is definitely going to be a step in terms of destigmatizing mental health and talks of suicide ideation and other mental health issues that people might encounter.
Yeah, I'm honestly just so proud of dictionary.com.
They're doing it.
Yeah. All right. Our woman of the week is Julia Cordua. And I'm super excited to talk about her just because she's someone I definitely admire. And we'll just dive in. So we'll get some background. She has an MBA from Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern and a bachelor's degree in communications from UCLA. Her work experience deals with being a vice president of marketing for Red, where she helped raise more than $160 million to fight AIDS in Africa. I think it's pretty crazy. She also has led global marketing efforts at Motorola and a wireless startup. She currently is the CEO of Thorn, which is an organization co-founded by Ashton Kutcher and Demi Moore. And they build technology to defend children from sex trafficking. And this technology works to accelerate victim identification, equip platforms, and empower the public.
Yeah. In hearing about her, it's just, first of all, in addition to her educational accomplishments, even though she did go to UCLA, I won't hold that against her, me being a Trojan for life. But the fact that she is so vocal about it and using all of her marketing and business skills for this very sensitive and often overlooked topic, I think is really great.
I listened to a TED Talk by Julia a couple months ago. It may be longer, but she described how they were working with a company who, after evaluating their computers and from the previous history of working with other companies, that around 1 p.m. every day during Monday through Friday, the weekdays, that is the time when men go on the computer and buy children.
Are you serious?
At work. Yes. These are not what people think of as Johns. These are fathers. These are sons. These are brothers. They're uncles.
These are your coworkers.
So the technology that Thorn is building can be incorporated into businesses to track on the computers and prohibit their workers from potentially going on the dark web and buying children.
I am a person who was definitely ignorant about human trafficking in the U.S. before you started discussing all the work that you're doing with me. And so it wasn't that I didn't care about human trafficking. I just wasn't aware to what extent it was going on and in what ways it could be going on under my nose or, as you just described, like in the cubicle next to me.
I think that falls in context with everyone. Even before I became involved, I knew human trafficking was around, but I didn't know the extent of it until I actually got involved and seen it. And that's something I definitely advocate for, is education within the classrooms and out on the street and the community, just so that everyone can be aware. Because especially nowadays, like in Zeffie's case of like the internet, if she met him there or at the mall, you're a teen, that you're vulnerable.
Yeah.
You're vulnerable.
You are. And also, I know, at least for me, this is something that, you know, I still struggle with. But when certain people tell me certain things, I'm not as receptive to the message. I know, especially in high school, if my mom told me, oh, that sweater's not cute, I wouldn't listen to her. But if my friend said it, I'd be like, oh, okay. Or if someone, another adult who I, you know, trusted their opinion, was just like, oh, no, you shouldn't be wearing that. It's not great, but it's also a reality of a lot of people growing up. They're more receptive to information coming from other trusted adults rather than sometimes their own parents. So in your work with education, I think that that's definitely how a lot of younger people are receiving that message, in taking steps to prevent human trafficking.
Yeah. Yeah. So Julia did a great job at Thorn, and she's their first CEO. She came on shortly after Ashton Kutcher and Demi Moore created and co-founded Thorn. But if you would like more information about Thorn, the progress that they are making, and how you can donate to their cause, you can visit them at thorn.org.
We want to thank you guys for listening to ACT UP. If you like what you're hearing, please review us on whatever platform you listen to. If you have any recommendations or specific women that you would like to hear about, please email us at actuppodcast1@gmail.com. And please follow us on Instagram and Facebook.
And before we go, how you can help to work to end human trafficking. Best way to help is to become educated on human trafficking and inform your friends, family, and community. Use your voice through social media, get involved in local organizations, or just donate and support businesses and organizations that work to end human trafficking. Some organizations are the Salvation Army, which has a human trafficking task force that is in many states. There's the Coast Coalition to Abolish Slavery and Trafficking that's located in Los Angeles, California. The Center for Human Trafficking Awareness located in Florida. Justice Planning Management Associates located in Maine. There's IUTA located in Washington, D.C. Turnaround located in Towson, Maryland. Polaris, which is a national organization. I don't know if anyone on the West Coast knows, but In-N-Out Burger matches donations 3-1 to fight human trafficking. So go order a burger, shake, and support ending human trafficking. And there's tons of other organizations that you can do some research for near you to find to get involved in if that's what you decide that you want to try and do. If not, there's a lot of organizations that you could just go online and donate, or just simply educating yourself and spreading the awareness. I think that is super important in being aware.
Yeah. In-N-Out also has the hotline number to report any suspicious activity of human trafficking on the side of all of their delivery trucks.
Yes. And I think that is amazing, because that kind of goes to a whole another topic that we can dive into another time. But there is an organization that works with truckers. It's Truckers Against Trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
Because at truck stop, human trafficking, that is another place where it is very prevalent. And it makes me so happy that In-N-Out Burger has that number on their trucks, because that's just a whole other way to inform people.
Yeah. The reputable sources that we acquired this week's information from are Breaking911.com, WeAreLatinLive.com, FightTheNewDrug.org, NPR, Thorn.org, GLG.IT, Congress.gov, and the California Legislative Information. Our next podcast will be recorded on September 20th, 2020, so please stay tuned. Thank you all, and stay safe.
Thank you.